This is Money Talking from WNYC. I'm Charlie Herman. I'm joined today by our regular contributors, Joan Osaer with The New York Times and Rana Fruhar with Time Magazine. Pfizer, the New York-based pharmaceutical giant, wants to become a British company. The maker of Viagra and Lipitor is proposing a multi-billion dollar takeover of its rival AstraZeneca, and if it's successful, it would then reincorporate in Britain. Doing this would not only give the company some new experimental cancer drugs, but it'll also lower the company's tax rate. Currently, it's about 27% in the U.S., and next year in the U.K., it'd be about 20%. And as a British company, Pfizer can avoid paying U.S. taxes on profits it makes overseas. It's called a tax inversion. And Rana, is there a danger that other multinational companies, say Boeing or Apple, might try and do the same thing if this is successful?
Well, you know, I think it's pretty unusual to say that you're actually going to give up your sort of corporate citizenship here in the U.S. and potentially move abroad in order to get a different sort of tax jurisdiction. But companies like Apple, and particularly companies in the tech sector and in the pharma sector, do try and move a lot of profits, a lot of patents, a lot of intellectual property abroad, A, because it's easy to do, and then they can take advantage of lower tax jurisdictions, not just in places like Britain, but also in Asia, the Netherlands, many other countries. And in fact, this is an issue that became very politically sensitive during the last election cycle. And I think it's actually going to be that way again in 2016. And I expect that you're going to hear a lot more calls for corporate tax reform as a result of this.
You know, Reuters added up the number of companies that have done this. Not that there are that many, but they basically said, since the financial crisis, about 24 companies have done this. And that's the same number it had done the previous 25 years.
So is it the tax code in a way that's driving corporate decisions about how they're going to run their business?
I think so. I mean, I think it's a huge issue. The fact that you've got a system where you can move intellectual property and profits anywhere around the planet and that it's legal makes it hard to justify for these blue chip companies, you know, why you shouldn't do that. They've got lawyers and accountants working on this stuff. But I think that this is going to become a hugely political issue, particularly if more companies start to do it.
Well, Joe, then that raises the question that when you look at a lot of the profits that these companies are making, a lot of them overseas, they don't want to bring them to the U.S. because they don't want to pay U.S. taxes on them. Are they really overseas profits, or are they doing what Ron is implying, that, you know, they're shifting things around, there's intellectual property rights, that the money is actually being made in the U.S., but it looks like it's coming from elsewhere?
There's some of both. There's certainly arrangements where companies move their intellectual property abroad, and then the U.S. company pays royalties to the division overseas, and they post the profits overseas. But there's also tremendous amount of business that's done overseas by General Electric and General Motors and all kinds of companies. It's worth remembering that the U.S. tax rate is 35% for corporations. It is riddled with loopholes. But nonetheless, companies like the idea of paying a lower, flatter rate, which they can get almost anywhere in the world. The one other thing is that the U.S. is one of the few places in the world that taxes a company's worldwide revenue. And the only exception for that is, as long as you keep it overseas and you don't bring it back to the U.S., you're exempted from that tax, which is why so many companies have so much money, in Pfizer's case, $69 billion, just sitting there abroad.
And I also want to say that even though corporations in this country pay only about 10% of the total tax burden, they are taking a larger share of the profit pie than ever before. So there's a disconnect there to me.
Well, let me change topics here. A few weeks ago, I saw the Broadway musical version of Woody Allen's Bullets Over Broadway, and there's a moment where one of the characters always stops another from talking and says, shh, shh, don't speak. And I'm wondering if this is something that the LA Clippers owner Donald Sterling wished that he had done when the audio tapes were released that show him making these racist comments. The NBA's commissioner reacted by banning Sterling for life and says he'll work to force Sterling to sell the team. Clearly, what he said and what he believes is wrong. But let's look at this from a business point of view. Is there some sort of scale, some sort of balance between leadership, success, profits on the one hand, and on the other, the personal beliefs of a boss?
Any CEO who's caught making racist remarks, even on a private phone call, it's language that's unacceptable in the society at large. And he or she would be ousted. But there's also a middle ground, abortion, for instance, or
gay marriage, for example.
Yes, where because it's not settled, because the entire society doesn't believe one thing, a CEO can say something or have a belief system or have his corporation have a belief system and not have to fear retribution.
You know, I suspect that there's a kind of a hierarchy of how bad comments get, and that there, as Joe's saying, there are certain things you simply can't be as a CEO and keep your job. You can't be an open racist. You can't be openly sexist or do things that are against the law, obviously. But you can have conservative social beliefs. I think what's interesting is whether or not companies that have some of these ideas are going to actually move more to the mainstream or even to the left as the population does. So like in the last presidential elections, you saw that politicians that were anti-gay marriage didn't do very well with younger voters because 70% of younger Americans have no problem with gay marriage. So I think it becomes a kind of a market issue. Do you want people to buy your products, particularly in this prime youth retail bracket?
Well, so in the little time we have left, Rana, what are you looking ahead to?
So I'm thinking about whether we all may be due for a raise soon.
That'd be great.
It would be great. We've begun to see a little bit of what economists call wage inflation, meaning pay is starting to go up in certain categories. And that's really good news because that's what you need in a more robust recovery. The big question, though, is how much slack there is in the labor market. So how many people don't have jobs but want to have jobs? And this is a big debate right now. And it's going to be very influential for Fed policy going forward in the next year, because if the Fed believes that there's not a whole lot of slack, and that we're going to see more wage inflation, interest rates are going to go up. If they think that there's plenty of people still out of work that want jobs, they're probably going to stay low for a longer period of time.
Joe?
I am watching Coca-Cola. As you'll recall, when last we left this story, Warren Buffett had abstained from voting against their equity compensation plan, even though he said he was against it. Since that's happened, Coca-Cola has actually said, given Buffett's negative views, they're going to go back and review the equity compensation plan and perhaps make some changes to it. So that's what I'm going to be watching.
Well, we'll be watching those stories and all the week's financial news at WNYC.org. You can take this program with you as a podcast available on iTunes. Rana Fruhar with Time Magazine, Jonah Serra with The New York Times. Thanks for joining.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Charlie Herman. This is Money Talking from WNYC.